This is Dan's Mega 65 Digest for January 2025. Disassembling Crossroads, Part 2. In last November's Digest, we started a project to dissect the classic C64 title Crossroads, published by Compute's Gazette magazine in December 1987. We got a handle on how the game works by playing it, and by inspecting the running game state in Retro Debugger, a C64 emulator with memory visualization features. In this issue, we'll get up close and personal with the Crossroads machine code, using a tool called a disassembler. Combined with what we've learned and some world knowledge of Commodore programs, we can begin to produce human-readable assembly language source code for the game. Crossroads was so popular that Compute commissioned a sequel, Crossroads 2 Pandemonium, which was published in December 1988. I did some searching to see if anyone had disassembled the Crossroads games already, and discovered an excellent disassembly of Crossroads 2 by GitHub user Hyph-Z. For the sake of the exercise, I did not look closely at this disassembly at first, but I do expect the original Crossroads to be similar in many ways. We won't do a full disassembly of Crossroads in a single newsletter, but we'll answer some of the most important questions. Before we do that, let's see what everyone else is up to. Petcore pre-release. Olaf Rialto Siebert is working on a Commodore PET core for the Mega 65, and has invited everyone to help test a pre-release version. The file host download includes core builds for R3 and R6 boards, and a copy of the necessary ROM files to install to the SD card. Do keep in mind that this is a pre-release and may be missing features. Check out the Commodore PET core on GitHub to see source files and file bugs. Many thanks to Rialto for this exciting project. Gaplus Arcade Core. Muse continues to deliver arcade core goodness. This month, it's Gaplus, the third game in the Galaga series from Namco. As usual, you will need to download the Gaplus core, locate MAME ROMs on the internet, then follow the setup instructions to produce the files for the SD card. The Gaplus core is available for both R3 and R6 mainboards. I encountered an issue with the R6 version when using HDMI video, where after a few seconds the game video becomes a static screen of vertical bars. This does not occur over VGA or with the version for the R3 mainboard. A fix is in progress. Goodwell's QR code generator. Goodwell, aka the 8-bit theory on YouTube, recently attempted an experiment to write a QR code generator for multiple vintage Commodore computers in multiple languages, including BASIC 2, BASIC 7, C, 6502 assembly language, and BASIC 65 for the Mega 65. The video about the experience discusses implementation techniques and performance characteristics of these implementations. Definitely check it out, it's worth watching the whole thing. Goodwell uploaded the Mega 65 version to FileHost and is continuing to refine it. It might even get added to the Mega 65 intro disk menu system to make it easier to share URLs in the menu text. The GitHub repo for the QR code generator has all of the versions of the experiment as source code. Don't miss Goodwell's follow-up video about the Mega 65's technical design, based on his early experiences developing for the computer. Mega Mage by Sir Geldy. Hot off the presses, Sir Geldy on forum64.de has posted Mega Mage, a roguelike adventure game written entirely in BASIC. Adorable character graphics and fast map scrolling enhance the gameplay. Even better, Sir Geldy built the tools used to develop the graphics, map, and object and monster metadata for the game on the Mega 65 in BASIC, and has included these tools on the disk. Download the zip file from Sir Geldy's message post, unpack it, and transfer the D81 disk image to your Mega 65. To start the game, mount the disk image, then run Mega Mage. Even more featured files. Soccer by Sir Lazarus is a new soccer-themed paddle game. It is written in BASIC and requires the latest ROM beta version 920409 because it uses recently added features. This ROM update will be included in the next stable release package. Grab your paddle controllers and check it out. Giotto 2020 by Tone Deaf is a word puzzle game similar to Mastermind. It plays something like Wordle, though its invention predates Wordle by a year. Tone Deaf originally wrote this for other micros and made this new version for the Mega 65 in BASIC. Pac-Man in BASIC Demo by XLAR54. This playable demo sports many features of the arcade classic, including music, sound, and polished graphics. XLAR insists this is just a demo, but only a few features are missing, most notably power pellets. And yes, this too is implemented entirely in BASIC 65. Opal Dance by Lokmana is a colorful puzzle and maze game. Match colored pieces by walking into them, but think before you move. Each match of two pieces replaces the first piece with a wall and removes the second piece. Clear as much of the level as you can. Mega 65 Perpetual Calendar by G. Castell, middle-aged coder on Discord. Generate calendars for any month of any year. Developed for BASIC 65 with 11, you can get the source code from GitHub. XEMU Keyboard Layout Reference for Windows by Discord user Digger. Windows users, keep this handy app open alongside the XEMU emulator to remember how to replicate Mega 65 keystrokes on the PC keyboard. See also the project homepage in German and the README file in English included with the download. Mouster back in stock. Mouster, the USB to Commodore DB9 adapter for modern USB mice and game controllers, is back in stock after a long hiatus. This is one of the best ways to use a modern USB mouse with the Mega 65. It even works with wireless mice that use USB dongles. Get one while you can. See RetroHax's update from December 30th, 2024 for details. Digest administrative note. I am considering migrating the Digest to a new email newsletter service. As Substack evolves their business model and practices, I want to make sure the Digest is hosted on services that remain open and compatible with the values of the Mega 65 project. I'll let everyone know in advance before I make changes. The change should be fully automatic, including migrating donations made through the Substack interface as paid subscriptions. Hopefully I can migrate this podcast's feed URL automatically as well, but this will depend on how your podcast app is subscribed. I'll try to figure it out and let you know. If anyone has any feedback on this change, please let me know. I know a couple of you are using the Substack app to read it, which should be the only case affected by a migration. You can always find all issues of the Digest on my website and subscribe to it using an RSS feed reader. You can also become a patron of the Digest at ko-fi.com/DDDAAANNN. The Art of Disassembly. A computer's CPU performs instructions encoded as bytes in the computer's memory. This machine code is difficult to work with as a list of numbers, so when we humans want to write a program, we use a programming language, and a tool that converts that language to machine code for the computer to execute. Assembly language is a human language that most closely resembles the machine code, with human-readable names for each machine code instruction. The corresponding conversion tool is called an assembler. There's a simple assembler built into the Mega 65's machine language monitor. You can start the monitor by entering the monitor command at the ready prompt. Try doing this now. and use the A command to assemble this short program. First type monitor, then press return. Then enter A1600 space LDA space hash $01 and press return. The A says start assembly. 1600 is the first address for assembling this instruction, and LDA hash $01 is the load accumulator instruction. Next, type STA space $D020, press return. LDA space hash $00, STA space $D021, RTS. After the last line, press return on a line by itself to stop the assembler. As you type each line, the monitor converts the instruction to the corresponding machine code. It stores the machine code at the requested address in memory, and also prints the address and machine code bytes to the screen as hexadecimal values. So the LDA hash $01 instruction was assembled to address 1600 as the bytes A901, STA D020 was AD20D0, and so on. The monitor can also reverse this process to show you which instructions are represented by bytes in memory. This process is known as disassembly. Use the D command followed by the address, D1600, then press return. Sure enough, the program you just entered is right where you put it, at address 1600. There's also a bunch of other stuff after the last instruction you typed, starting at address 160B, maybe garbage data or something left behind by another program. These bytes may or may not represent machine code instructions, but the disassembler diligently tries to interpret them as instructions either way. These instructions are what the CPU would perform if you told it to treat that memory as code. The number of bytes used to encode an instruction differs depending on the instruction. Some instructions, like RTS, are encoded as a single byte. Others, like LDA hash $01, use two bytes. Still others, such as STA $D020, require three bytes. Anything trying to interpret bytes as machine code, whether that's a disassembler or the CPU itself, needs to know the address of the first byte of the first instruction, or it could get very confused. Try using the disassemble command again, this time with a starting address of 1601. So D1601, press return. The monitor tries to disassemble some of the memory of the program you entered, but the result looks nothing like the program. 1601 is the address of the second byte of the LDA instruction, 01, which to the disassembler and the CPU looks like a version of the ORA instruction that uses two bytes. At address 1603, the next byte 20 looks like a three-byte JSR instruction. Coincidentally, the next incorrect instruction gets the disassembler back on track, aligned with the correct first instruction byte at address 1607. But by now, a CPU trying to execute this code will get very lost and probably crash. Disassemblers are not magic, and they need help from the operator, that's you, to convert machine code back into human-readable assembly language. The disassembly process requires research, maybe some guessing and checking, taking notes, and labeling addresses and values once you've figured out what they mean. A modern disassembly tool can make this process surprisingly easy. Introducing Ghidra. Ghidra, spelled G-H-I-D-R-A, is a powerful disassembler and reverse engineering multi-tool. It supports many types of CPU machine code, including the 6502, and supports extensions to add more. Ghidra was originally developed by the United States National Security Agency, the NSA, and has been released as open source and free of cost. I want to credit two YouTube videos on the topic of using Ghidra for reverse engineering Commodore 64 programs, Introduction to Ghidra by David Yaud, and How to Start a New C64 Project in Ghidra by Yarko Leti. These are worth watching when you get a chance, and we'll be using Leti's configuration files in a moment. Setting up Ghidra. As of this writing, the latest version of Ghidra is version 11.2.1. It's a Java-based application, and it requires a recent version of the Java runtime, 21 or later, which you may need to install or upgrade. Ghidra will tell you if your Java is too old. Properly installed, Windows users can double-click on ghidrarun.bat to start the program, and macOS and Linux users invoke the Ghidra run shell script. As usual, macOS will refuse to run the scripts and tools until you have blessed them in the Privacy and Security panel. You probably know the drill by now. Attempt to start, Ghidra run, dismiss the complaint, open macOS settings, privacy and security, scroll down, click open anyway. If you use Ghidra for other stuff later, you'll need to similarly bless some internal components, which you can do in the terminal app on the command line. See the article for these commands. When you run Ghidra for the first time, it will ask for the path to the Java home directory. This will depend on your operating system. See the article again for the path on macOS. Ghidra opens its main window from which you create or select a project, and open Tools. Creating the project. Let's start a new project using the crossroads.prg file that we extracted from the disk image in last month's digest. Create a new project. Step 1, open the File menu, select New Project. Step 2, select Non-Shared Project, click Next. Step 3, create a new folder for the project and select it. Enter a project name, such as Crossroads, click Finish. The dialog window closes and the project is created. Next, import the crossroads.prg file. Step 1, open the File menu, select Import File. Step 2, navigate to the file crossroads.prg, then select File to import. Step 3, leave the format set to Raw Binary. Step 4, click the ellipsis button, the three dots, next to Language. Select 6502, which is at the top of the list for this version of Ghidra. Click OK. Step 5, leave everything else at default settings, then click OK. Another window opens with some information about the file. Dismiss this with OK. Finally, double-click on the crossroads.prg file in the project to open it in the Code Browser tool. The first time you do this, Ghidra will offer to analyze the file, say yes. Leave the default set of analyzers selected, then click Analyze. The analysis doesn't produce spectacular results just yet, but it's usually worth doing. Here is crossroads.prg in all its glory in the Code Browser window. These are the same bytes we saw in the hex dump, but now they're listed one per line. We'll use this interface to massage the data as we learn what each part of it means. Commenting the code. Let's start by telling Ghidra the C64 memory address where this data gets loaded. Because this is a PRG file, it begins with 2 bytes that are not loaded into memory. We could have gone through an extra step to remove these bytes before importing the data, but for our purposes, it's enough to just take these into account when telling Ghidra where everything lives. This data gets loaded into a single block of memory that starts at address 0801. Minus the 2 PRG header bytes, we can tell Ghidra to start counting addresses at 07FF. Step 1. In the Window menu of the Code Browser window, select Memory Map. The Memory Map window opens, showing one RAM segment that starts at address 0000. Step 2. Select the RAM line, then locate the button whose tooltip reads Move a block to another address. It's a blue arrow cross icon. Step 3. For the new start address, type 07FF. Click OK. Step 4. Close the Memory Map window. Notice that the data is now lined up with the memory addresses. The first byte of the basic bootstrap is at 0801, and the 2-byte end of basic terminator is at 080B. We peeked at this in the previous digest. Let's add a comment describing this data. Right-click on the line for 0801 to open the context menu. Select Comments, set EOL comment, EOL's for end of line. In the window that opens, type a useful description such as Start of Basic Bootstrap. You may wish to add a similar comment on 080C for end of basic bootstrap. Initiating disassembly. The basic bootstrap uses the sys command to invoke machine code starting at decimal address 2300. Ghidra even shows the 2300 characters next to the byte listing, guessing that we might be interested in what these look like as ASCII characters. In hexadecimal, this address is 08FC. Navigate to this address in the byte listing. Here's a quick way. Press G for go, then enter the address in hexadecimal, 08FC. Start the disassembly at this address. Press D for disassemble. Ghidra has just done a bunch of work for us. It took our word for it that the bytes starting at 08FC are machine code. A9, FF represent the LDA FF instruction, which Ghidra spells LDA hash 0XFF, and updated the code listing accordingly. It proceeded to the next instruction and kept going as long as it was reasonably certain that the CPU would treat those bytes as instructions as it executed. Scroll down, and notice that Ghidra stopped disassembly at address 0CAB, where it found an RTS instruction. The bytes starting at 0CAC may be more CPU instructions, but Ghidra doesn't know this for sure. In fact, we can see evidence that it may be data and not instructions. The bytes from 0CB1 to 0CBA spell out crossroads in ASCII. Ghidra doesn't know this is more likely to be PETSCII and not ASCII, but it displays the ASCII letters for our benefit just in case. Keep scrolling down to 0DC5. Ghidra found more code. Starting with the first address we gave it, Ghidra decoded each instruction, and when it found a branching instruction or subroutine call, it continued disassembly at that location, filling everything in. It assigned some temporary labels for things that look like functions, such as FUN_0DC5. As we try to understand what the program does, we can replace these labels with more intuitive names. In the end, we'll have a fully human-readable assembly language program. Or as human-readable as assembly language gets, anyway. Ghidra made similar attempts to highlight data locations referenced in the code, assigning labels such as DAT_08B0. Everything referenced by something else is annotated with the cross-references. For example, the byte at address 08B0 is read by an instruction at address 0A7A, so it lists 0A7AR, R for read, next to 08B0. We can add our own labels. Let's do this for our entry point, 08FC. Step 1, press G for go, enter 08FC. Step 2, press L for label. Enter a label name of start. Because this is the entry point of the program, select the entry point property. Click OK. Importing C64 symbols. Ghidra has invented labels for all of the data and code referenced by the disassembled code. The addresses within the imported data range have blue labels and cross-references. Where the code references an address not in the imported range, Ghidra also generated a label and colored it in red. Consider the first few instructions of the program starting at 08FC. LDA, hash 0XFF, STA, DAT_D40E, STA, DAT_D40F. This loads the byte value FF into the accumulator and stores that value to addresses D40E and D40F. If these were just memory locations, we would assume that these are variables used by the game for storing game state, like the player's position. In this case, we can apply some knowledge of how the Commodore 64 works. Addresses in the range D000 to DFFF are input-output registers that control or are controlled by the computer's hardware. We can look up what these registers do in a Commodore 64 technical reference. In this case, these registers belong to the SID sound chip, specifically the frequency of the oscillator on voice 3. We don't yet know why the program does this, but we do know that's what it does. The next two instructions and a bit more knowledge of C64 programming gives us a hint. LDA hash 0x80 STA DAT underscore D412. The technical reference says D412 is the SID Voice 3 control register. Setting bit 7 like this tells it to use the noise waveform. Crossroads is certainly a noisy game, but it's probably setting this up to use as a random number generator, or at least a seed for one. We'll have to keep our eye out for something that samples a value from Voice 3. Now that we've identified DAT underscore D40E et al., we could update the labels to something that describes their functions. To do this, you would right-click on the label and select Edit Label or move the cursor onto the label and press L. Considering that the C64 I/O registers always do the same thing in every program, it would be nice if Ghidra could automatically recognize all of them and give them useful names. The following is one way to do this, based on the files supplied by Yarko Leddy to accompany his YouTube video on the subject. Download these C64 symbol files using the links in the article. io.txt describes the I/O registers, kernel.txt the kernel jump table subroutines, ram.txt commonly used C64 internal kernel variables, io_d00.bin, which is a binary snapshot of the initial values of C64 I/O registers, and kernel_e000.bin, a binary snapshot of the Commodore 64 kernel. The TXT files tell Ghidra to apply certain labels to certain addresses when they appear in the code. The bin files fill in the memory ranges themselves in the Ghidra project, so you can get some idea of what's actually there in the Commodore 64's memory. In your project, the I/O and kernel data will exist as overlays. An overlay is a portion of memory that may contain different things at different times based on system state. With the Commodore 64, I/O registers and kernel ROM occupy addresses that can also refer to RAM based on the memory banking register. Ghidra can only see that an instruction accesses an address, not the memory map of the computer at the time the instruction is called. Telling Ghidra that these memory regions are overlays accounts for the possibility that a given reference to an address may refer either to I/O and ROM or the underlying RAM. To create the I/O overlay, step 1. From the code browser window, open the File menu, then select Add to Program. Step 2. Select the file io_d000.bin, click Add to Program. Step 3, in the Add to Program dialog, click Options. Select Overlay, use a block name of I/O, uppercase, and set the base address to D000. Click OK in the Options dialog, then OK in the Add to Program dialog. Dismiss the Import Results window. To create the kernel overlay, repeat these steps with the kernel_e000.bin file, using a block name of kernel, that's K-E-R-N-A-L, all uppercase, and a base address of E000. Now we can import the symbols that describe addresses in these regions. Ghidra is a highly scriptable application environment, and we can use a script that comes with Ghidra to import the text symbols files. To import the symbols, step 1, from the Window menu, select Script Manager. Step 2, scroll down to find importSymbolsScript.py. Double-click it to run it. Step 3. When prompted, select the io.txt file. Click the button that says Go Baby Go. Step 4. Repeat these steps for the kernel.txt file and again for the ram.txt file. Ghidra now knows about the I/O registers via an overlay with sensibly named symbols. Ghidra still doesn't know which references refer to RAM and which refer to I/O. We have to tell it. Go back to the STA instruction at 08FE. Remember, press G to go to an address. Its destination is still the red symbol DAT_D40E. Click on it, then press R to edit the reference. In the pop-up window, double-click the reference, then change the drop-down menu that says RAM : IO : Click Update and close the reference editor. The symbol has changed to D40E_FRQ_3_LO. That's better, I guess. No, seriously, it's fine. It says, it's hard to, when I read it out loud, to know what I'm saying, but it's a frequency of voice 3, the low byte. That's what FRQ3LO stands for. You get used to the names, they're fine. You can even change the names in the text file if you want. It's unusual for a C64 game to unbank the I.O. registers, so it's a little inconvenient that each label needs to be applied like this. I haven't found a good way to automatically declare all references to be for the I.O. overlay. One possibility might be to add the file io_d000.bin as a non-overlay region, then edit the io.txt symbols file to remove the io::: part of each address. For now, I like keeping I.O. as an overlay because it accurately describes how the Commodore 64 works. I did find a reasonably fast way to update all of the labels manually using Ghidra's search feature. In the search menu, select Program Text. Prepare a search for DAT_D in all fields of the listing display and click Search All. A window opens with the search results, and clicking on a result causes the listing display to jump to that location. I got 38 results, and it only took me a few minutes to update all of the references to use the I.O. labels. It's not the most fun I've ever had with a computer, but it didn't take so long that I regretted not automating it. Getting some answers. Now that we have at least some idea of what we're looking at, let's try to answer a few questions that will help us understand how Crossroads works. These are just questions that occurred to me, in the order I thought to ask them. They may not be the best questions or in the best order, but let's see what happens. Does the program call the kernel jump table? This is an easy one. A call to the kernel jump table would look like a JSR to a hexadecimal address beginning with an F. Ghidra will have generated a label like FUN_FFD2 prior to me updating it to use the kernel overlays symbols. So just like we used a search of DAT_D to find I.O. register references, we can search for FUN_F to find calls to the kernel routines. I get no results from this search, so I'm fairly confident that Crossroads does not call kernel routines. Alas, we don't get to use our kernel overlay. Maybe next time. Does the program use kernel vectors? As we've discussed in previous issues of the Digest, most games drive their game loop using CPU interrupts. There are two ways to set up an interrupt handler. Replace the kernel's interrupt handlers in FFFA to FFFF, or use a kernel vector to add a custom subroutine to the kernel's interrupt handler. Let's check the latter option first because it's more common for simple C64 games. The designers of the Commodore ROM wanted people to use the vector kernel call to read and update the kernel vector table, and that's still a best practice for Mega 65 programs. Even early on, C64 programmers skipped over that part of the manual and just wrote to the C64 vector table at 0314 to 0333. We can search for the string 0314 to find any direct references to the IRQ vector. Yep, there it is. The instructions at 0BA8 to 0BB1 are writing address 11C4 to the kernel IRQ vector 0314 to 0315. When we imported the ram.txt file, Ghidra labeled these as 0314 IRQ vector low and 0315 IRQ vector high. This appears to be the only vector touched, and it is only set in this one location in the code that Ghidra has disassembled. Let's go to the address being written to the vector and check it out. Type G to go, then enter address 11C4. Hoo boy! Ghidra hasn't disassembled this yet. This is because the main routine, which sets up the game and installs the IRQ vector, doesn't actually call the IRQ handler directly. We have a bit more work to do. Press D to start disassembly from this address. Also, press L to add an entry point label with a name such as IRQ. We'll have to redo our searches for IO register labels and kernel calls now that we have more disassembled code. That's just how it goes. I found 8 more IO registers, but still no kernel calls. Does the program do any C64 CPU bank switching? I mentioned that most games leave IO registers banked to D000 to DFFF, the initial state of the Commodore 64. We can double-check that by looking for references to the C64 bank switching register, address 0001. A search for DAT underscore 0001 does produce 2 results in the startup routine, so it's worth taking a closer look. Starting at address 09F9, the routine sets this to 73, or binary 0111-0011. According to C64 technical documentation, this setting makes sure the C64 character ROM, the graphics data for the PETSCII font, is visible at D000 to DFFF instead of the IO registers. It's not that way for long, though. Just below, at address 0A10, the banking register gets set to 77, or binary 0111-0111, which switches the IO registers back in. While the character ROM is visible, a short loop copies the first 472 bytes of PETSCII graphics data to address 2000. Now that we know what this does, we can rename the label lab_09ff to something like copy char loop or something like that, and add explanatory comments to the bank switching instructions. We can also relabel DAT_0001 while we're at it. Does the program use any self-modifying code? From our perspective as reverse engineers, one of the scariest things a program can do is modify its own code. The program is entirely within its right to do this, code is just data in memory, but it means that the disassembler may not be seeing the code in the form it is executed. To find places where the program might be modifying itself, we have to look for attempts to store values in locations that Ghidra believes are inside subroutine code. I bet there's a way to get Ghidra to make a list of such places, but I haven't found one yet. I did notice, however, that Ghidra refers to such addresses by the name of the function plus an offset, like this. STA FUN underscore 0B4A plus 1. These address expressions appear in a gray color. From visual inspection, I found only a few examples of this. Thankfully, they were all short subroutines that were easy to understand, and all of the self-modifications were to addresses for LDA and STA instructions. Several of these appear to be simple utility functions for using addresses from variables together with indirect addressing. For example, FUN underscore 0B4A is simply the STA instruction in absolute Y-indexed addressing mode, followed by an RTS. To use this routine, the program writes an address into the STA instruction, sets the A and Y CPU registers, then calls the subroutine. This probably saved the developer some headache. Using a single self-modifying mechanism instead of having every subroutine modify its own instructions. The initialization routine near the entry point uses this mechanism as part of a loop to fill some memory with zeros. Is there any more code? We found the entry point and the IRQ vector routine, and we identified self-modifying code and confirmed that it's not doing something crazy like dynamically writing jump instructions to memory at runtime. It looks like Ghidra has found most of the code in the program. Are we safe to conclude that the remaining unidentified regions are static data, or perhaps initialized variable space? This requires a bit of judgment, a bit of guesswork, and a willingness to change our minds later, but we can start to form some conclusions from a visual inspection of Ghidra's analysis. Here's what I see so far. 080D to 08FB. I see some repeating numeric patterns that are unlikely to be instructions. Ghidra found cross-references into this memory starting at 08B0, and they're all read-only references from the initialization routine. The program must refer to some of this data with dynamically calculated addresses that Ghidra can't see. It's not conclusive, but with no obvious writes to this memory, this is probably static data, such as graphics patterns. 0CAC to 0DC4. Ghidra is displaying obvious patterns in the ASCII decoding that match text displayed on the game's screen, with strings such as crossroads and one player, and many space characters, hexadecimal 20. There are only a few explicit read-only references. This is probably character data for the static parts of the display. 0F65 to 11C3 and 15FE to 1693. These are less obvious to me just from staring at them. Some of it is clearly data, but I don't yet know how to interpret patches of it. Once again, there are no explicit instructions writing to these areas. For now, at least, I feel confident that these regions are static data and not code, and that Ghidra has found all of the code in the program. What's in the data? We can learn more about the suspected data regions by double-clicking on the cross-references and digging around the code that refers to them. We can also make some guesses about how the data is encoded and try to decode it to see if we recognize any patterns, similar to how we identified text strings with Ghidra's built-in ASCII decoding. I'm especially interested to find the character graphics data that gives Crossroads its special flair. This is likely to take the form of monochrome character pixel data, where each byte represents a row of 8 pixels, and consecutive bytes are stacked, usually in a square of 8 rows. If we visualized the bytes in suspicious data regions this way, would the Crossroads cast of characters jump out at us? Ghidra has extensive features for visualizing data structures. Once we have a guess as to how the data should be interpreted, we can paint data types onto the bytes and see if they make sense. For example, to visualize a byte as a binary number, step 1, locate address 080F. The byte is hexadecimal 44. Ghidra doesn't know how to interpret this, so it displays a type of ?, its hex value, and its ASCII value. Step 2, right-click on it to open the context menu, navigate to Data, then select the byte type. Ghidra updates ?? To DB. Step 3, right-click again, navigate to Data, now select the Settings option that has appeared now that the value has a type. Change format to binary and padding to padded. Click OK. Ghidra updates the visualization to a padded binary value, 0100100B for binary. Let's try this for a chunk of the data region 080D to 08F9. We can always undo it later. Click drag with the mouse or move the cursor to the first line and hold shift while cursoring down to select lines. Use the data context menu to make them all bytes displayed as padded binary. It's a little difficult to make out when displayed as zeros and ones, but I see some familiar faces. Going 8 bytes at a time, I see 2 frames of animation for each of an enemy missile at 080D, a bullet at 081D, the human or player at 082D, the purple rubberhead at 083D, and more. I have to squint to see the rest, but if each of the 9 enemies gets 16 bytes starting at 083D, it feels safe to say that these are graphics tiles up to at least 08CD. How does the program set up character graphics data? We have a rough idea that the game keeps its graphics assets starting at 080D and establishes its custom character font at address 2000 with some combination of this data and PETSCII characters from character ROM. We've already found where the setup routine copies the character ROM to 2000. What else does it do? it's relatively easy to see that a big chunk of the setup routine is messing around in the 2000 memory region. Starting from the beginning, it sets a few registers, then immediately dives into the work of rendering the character data, with various loops and STA instructions indexing into this memory. The characters of Crossroads walk in four directions, with two frames of animation. We only found two frames of animation in the graphics data, with the characters facing to the right. Can you guess where it gets the graphics for the other three directions? To achieve the full effect, the setup loop takes the 8x8 right-facing creature graphics and writes it into character graphics memory. Then, it flips each byte horizontally and writes the left-facing copy. Then, it rotates it 90 degrees one way for up-facing and 90 degrees the other way for down-facing. Moreover, the second step of each character's animation is drawn across two character tiles for that slick grid-breaking animation. The creature takes up two characters on the 40x25 screen for this half step, and no other creature or item is allowed in either tile at this moment. The setup routine renders these half steps dynamically from the 8x8 pixel data using bit shifting instructions to produce half tile images. I see groups of four bit shifting instructions at 0A5D and 0A6D that might be involved in this process. Just after setting up the character data at 2000, the program sets VIC register D018 to 18. This establishes how the VIC uses memory, and indeed, it sets the character memory pointer to 2000. It also sets the screen memory location to 0400. The VIC-2 can only see 16 kilobytes of the address space at a time, and which 16 kilobytes is selected by a register at DD00. Crossroads does not appear to change this register from its default setting. Future possibilities with Ghidra. That's a good start, and plenty for a single newsletter. Ghidra is a very powerful tool, and I'm still learning about what all it can do. Ghidra is highly extensible, and there is substantial potential for extensions and scripts to support C64 and Mega65 development and reverse engineering. In his video, Yarko Leddy is using his own Ghidra fork with a few nice features, such as Petsky string visualization. When I was squinting at the character set data, I was wishing for a bit of tool support for visualizing bit fields as graphics, much like how Retro Debugger lets you view memory contents in different ways. I wonder if Ghidra can do custom inline data visualizers like this, or if a feature like this is already available. The annotated disassembly can be exported in multiple formats, but none of them resemble something that could be reassembled by a tool such as Acme Assembler. A custom export tool or post-processing script would be handy for that, and would be easy to write. Of course, the thought naturally occurs to someday use Ghidra to disassemble Mega65 machine code programs. It'd take some effort, but it is possible to write an extension to provide 45GS02 CPU support to the disassembler. Ghidra has an entire language for specifying new processors, called SLAY. It'd also be good to generate symbols files and overlays for all of the Mega65's I/O register personalities. I already have symbol generator scripts that could be tweaked to produce something that Ghidra can import. In practice, most Mega65 machine code programs that exist today have friendly authors that have open-sourced their code. It's still fun to think about. I chose Crossroads for this demonstration for a few reasons. For one, it really was one of my favorite games, so I was excited to play with it. But also, I had a suspicion that its internals were straightforward enough to understand through disassembly. As fast and seamless as Crossroads is to play, you only need to know a few things about C64 programming to start to make guesses about how it works, just from looking at it. Many C64 games and demos use data compression techniques to limit disk space and loading times. This can make disassembly more difficult because you can't just load the PRG into Ghidra directly. One possible technique is to run the program in Retro Debugger, let it decompress everything into memory, then take a snapshot of the memory of the running program. You can then apply disassembly techniques to the snapshot. I suspected that Crossroads did not use compression for code and felt comfortable just loading the PRG file directly into Ghidra. If you're interested in writing programs for the Mega 65, it's worth studying C64 programs. The Commodore 65 was designed as a true technological successor to the Commodore 64, and many C64 programming techniques apply to C65 and Mega 65 programs. The original source code for many C64 programs have been lost to time, but we can use tools like Retro Debugger and Ghidra to pull them apart and reconstruct their secrets. There's one more tool that we can use to reverse engineer C64 programs, and it's sitting right beside you. The Mega 65 can run many C64 programs in its Go64 mode, and you can use the Mega 65 core's serial debugger along with a powerful front-end like M65DBG to analyze a running program. We'll have to revisit this in a future digest. Thanks to everyone for listening. I hope you're continuing to enjoy your Mega 65. Onward into the new year! For more, visit my website, dansanderson.com/mega65.